When I was little, my grandmother had bird feeders and a bird bath in her backyard. Some of my favorite memories growing up were listening to her tell me everything she knew about the feathered friends that visited her yard daily. How amazing would it have been for us to be able to capture images and videos of that experience and to be able to share them with others? Well, if you're ready to take your backyard bird watching to the next level, FeatherSnap makes Wi-Fi enabled smart bird feeders that blend the best of technology and nature. Get a high-def glimpse of your feathered friends with a top-of-the-line camera so every visitor can be seen with clarity and detail. A unique dual-feeder bin helps attract more species, and built-in solar panels keep your camera's battery going strong. FeatherSnap's mobile app creates a truly immersive experience, allowing you to collect and organize your favorite pics and videos and earn badges along the way. Best of all, FeatherSnap offers expert-trained AI identification of more than 275 North American species thanks to their in-house ornithologist. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. As most of you know, I'm a big fan of the outdoors, and most of my time is dedicated to beekeeping and gardening-related discussions. But you probably did not know that one of my responsibilities as a kid was caring for our houseplants. Yes, part of my $5 a week allowance went towards making sure all of the houseplants were healthy and happy. We used to have shamrocks, Christmas cactus, philodendron, and more. Which leads us to today's podcast sponsor, and a special thanks to Palm Street. Palm Street is the best live shopping app for the plant lover community. You can buy and sell rare plants, crystals, ceramics, and other unique goods. Connect with trusted plant sellers and nurseries that sell nationwide. Shop 24/7 and with live human customer support. What I love most about Palm Street is joining a live stream where sellers walk through all the details and characteristics of the plants they're offering. You can get live answers to your questions and see what questions others have asked as well. It's such a great way to engage for buyers and sellers. And as a special offer, new users will receive $5 app credit, 10% off their first order, and up to $6 off shipping for 3 orders. Palm Street, available on Google Play or the App Store.
Hey everybody, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you so very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out to Jeff at beekeepingfornewbies.com. That's N-E-W-B-E-E-S.com. All right, folks, today we have episode 9 of Bees in the News, and it is an exciting one. Now, it's pretty cool here. It's almost 4th of July. This is going to be July 3rd. And as always, I'm going to place the links to these up on the Beekeeping for Newbies homepage. That way you can go ahead and feel free to review some of these later on if you'd like. And without further ado, let's go ahead and jump right into article number 1. New study shows Roundup kills bees. Glyphosate targets undesired weeds as well as honeybees. The most widely sprayed herbicide in the world kills honeybees, according to a new report. Glyphosate, an herbicide and active ingredient in Monsanto's now Bayer's Roundup Weed Killer, targets enzymes long assumed to be found only in plants. The product is advertised as being innocuous to wildlife, but some bacteria also use this enzyme, including a microbiome found in the intestines of most bees. When pollinators come in contact with glyphosate, the chemical reduces this gut bacteria, leaving bees vulnerable to pathogens and premature death. The bee itself has no molecular targets for glyphosate, Nancy Moran, a biologist at the University of Texas at Austin and co-author of the study, told Environmental Health News. But its gut bacteria do have targets. Moran and other scientists liken glyphosate exposure to taking too many antibiotics and upsetting the balance of good bacteria that supports immunity and digestion. We all know that glyphosate is an antibiotic. It's very toxic to bacteria. It's even patented as an antibiotic, says Nathan Donnelly, a senior scientist at the Center of Biology Diversity. But very few researchers have actually dived into this issue. The good thing is that's starting to change. To show glyphosate's effect on gut microbiome, Moran and her team exposed honeybees to various levels of the herbicide, which measurably decreased total gut bacteria. Treated bees were then exposed to a common pathogen, and those with reduced bacteria were more likely to die prematurely. They repeated the experiment on other hives with similar results and published their findings early last week in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. So there's more to the article, but I think that this one is something that is really, really important because there are a lot of places, entities, chemical producers that keep telling us things like, oh, yeah, this is bee-friendly, it's no problem. Like the guys... you probably have something near you where you live. Like we have Mosquito Joes and some other places, and they just, you know, they go out and they spray everything so that you can have a nice, happy summer with no mosquitoes. I get it. I don't like mosquitoes either, so I completely understand why they want to do that. But I always question whenever I hear that, oh, yeah, this is bee-friendly. I'm like, is it really? Okay. All right, if you guys say so. But it seems like every time they say it's bee-friendly, something pops up later on to prove that maybe it's not. So there's some more to the article. Feel free to check that one out. Oh, and that article was from thesierraclub.org is where you can find that. Like I said, the link is in the on the page. Next one is from theconversation.com. Honeybees vote to decide on nest sites. Why we should listen. When people think of honeybees, they often think of classic wooden hives in which beekeepers are having to breed more and more bees just to keep managed populations stable. These man-made boxes designed to facilitate pollination and honey production in an era before animal welfare was considered are the hives in which scientists study honeybees. However, these boxes have little in common with the wild nest that featured in honeybee evolution. Are we missing something from the evolution of wild bees that might help managed bees today? Honeybees, originally a tropical insect, colonized cold climates 600,000 years ago by evolving complex behavioral patterns for finding and selecting nest cavities in trees. Swarming honeybees send out scouts to find suitable nests, measure them for fitness against a list of criteria such as height off the ground, volume, entrance size, and entrance location. They communicate this information to the rest of the scouts. Then the scouts engage in a voting system to select the best one and move the entire swarm, sometimes over a kilometer, to the next nest. This tells us that these nests were not that common even 600,000 years ago. However, the survival advantages warrant investing enormous amounts of energy in finding them. Disease, predators, and parasites are threatening the future of managed honeybees, the pollinators of our food crops. Yet research into these pressures and honeybee behavior rarely take account of the nest preferences of honeybees shaped by evolution. So it kind of goes on and on to talk about how we put them in boxes and why we do it one way or another. And the one area that I did want to kind of scroll down to, it's a pretty lengthy article, but it's pretty good, is around heat retention. I thought this was kind of neat. Heat retention is important for honeybees as they need to keep the internal temperature of part of their nest above 20 degrees Celsius all year round and part of it close to 34 degrees Celsius for most of the year. My findings show the tree nests lose substantially less heat than the conventional hives used by researchers. My study also used CFD to visualize the air flows inside both trees and hives, which showed that the internal air circulation within the hive is of substantially different type to that inside the tree nest. In addition, the study has shown that features of man-made hives inserted for the beekeeper's or researcher's convenience to easily insert and remove frames actually increase heat loss substantially. So anyway, kind of a neat article. You know, this talks to a lot of different things that you know, we discuss regularly, you know, on the podcast and the Discord in the beekeeping community. I always talk about how much I love my 4 and 5 frame nukes and just stacking them vertically and how much the bees seem to like that better. But I think there's so many different things at play, you know, moisture control, temperature control. It was a neat article, so I hope you enjoy that one. The next one is not honeybee specific, but I thought it was really cool. And because it came out of Canada from the University of Guelph, who we've talked about regularly on the podcast and on the and probably a few times on the YouTube channel there. But University of Guelph, queen bumblebees can survive underwater, finds new University of Guelph research. University of Guelph researchers have made an unexpected discovery that bumblebee queens are remarkably resilient to flooding, a finding that sheds light on the extraordinary adaptations of these vital insect pollinators. The study led by postdoctoral researcher Dr. Sabrina Rondeau and School of Environmental Sciences professor Dr. Nigel Rain marks the first investigation on the ability of bumblebee queens to survive prolonged periods of complete submersion while overwintering underground. Bumblebees are crucial insect pollinators known for their importance in ecosystems worldwide. During the cold season, queen bumblebees retreat underground to overwinter in small burrows. So it goes on to a little bit more of this, but this is actually where it gets to the good part here. The discovery of the U of G team made detailed in biology letters arose from an unexpected experimental error when water accidentally flooded containers housing overwintering bumblebee queens. Upon finding the submerged queens, I drained the water from the tubes and the queens were still alive. I was shocked, Rondeau recalls. This led the researchers to delve deeper into this mystery. The study involved exposing commercially reared bumblebee queens to a range of submersion treatments while they were overwintering under controlled conditions. Surprisingly, the queens maintained underwater for up to 7 days showed no lower survival rates compared to the control group not exposed to water. Bumblebees display remarkable resilience in flooding. So there's a little bit more to it, not much, but again, this is out of the University of Guelph up in Ontario, Canada. I thought that was a pretty interesting article. Feel free to check out their site, though. Paul Kelly does some great things up there with their bee program. So definitely worth checking out. Okay, next one. So if you're the kind of person that gets a little skeeved out or a little weird with anything medical, or, if you have any issues with your eyes, you may want to go ahead and take a little pause or, put your fingers in your ear and do the blah, 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 blah thing or whatever you got to do to make it through this next one. Horrific bee sting leaves barbed stinger hiding in a man's eyeball. Of all the places you can get stung by a bee, the eyeball has to be one of the most unfortunate spots. A rare case study from Wills Eye Hospital in the U.S. state of Philadelphia, that's what it actually says in the article, so we'll go ahead and correct that now, in the U.S. state of Pennsylvania, in the city of Philadelphia, details the horrifying story of a 55-year-old man who got a barbed bee stinger stuck in his right eye. The day of the sting, the man sought help at a local emergency department who promptly did their best to remediate the problem. Unbeknownst to all involved, the hospital's medical staff were unsuccessful in their attempt to remove all of the offending barb. Much of the spear-like appendage was still left embedded in the patient's iris. 2 days later, the man's vision and pain had worsened dramatically. The vessels in his right iris had begun to bleed, and he could barely see out of his injured eye. All he could manage when he shut his uninjured eye was to count his fingers. Fearful for his vision, the man took himself to an ophthalmology clinic. To figure out what was going on, specialists at the clinic used fluorescent dye to stain the inflamed eye's cornea. And it continues on about what they did to get the thing out. But it was actually pretty cool. There's a video on here you can watch. It says warning graphic content. It has a photo of ocular bee sting. And there's a couple of other things. It's kind of worth checking out if you're, if you don't mind looking at those types of things. Kind of neat. Okay, and the last one of the day in our continuing coverage of the Minot, North Dakota ladies softball team, the Honeybees. Habaneros escaped close call with the win over the Bees. The Minot Honeybees, 3-10, begin their four-game homestand against the Mankato Habaneros, 11-2, on Monday, July 1st, 6 days after playing their first official home game at Corbett Field in Minot. The Habaneros came into the game off the backs of a 7-game winning streak, and the Honeybees won their last game. This was the first of two doubleheaders between the clubs' back-to-back days and was broadcast on ESPN+. Minot tied the game at 5-5 before Mankato added two runs at the top of the eighth inning for the 7-5 win. The Honeybees took a 1-0 lead in the bottom of the first inning as Kariah Coran scored on the Jackie Albrecht putout. I don't know what a putout is. I don't know. I played baseball. I've never heard of a putout. Anyway, the Mankato Habaneros would respond in the top of the third inning with three runs of their own, take the 3-1 lead at the top of the second inning, and it goes on and on. I don't want to talk about it because the Honeybees lost, and I'm a little heartbroken about it. But hey, if you play for the Minot Honeybees, you're always welcome on the podcast. Feel free to give me a call. Folks, that is all I've got for today. I hope you all have an amazing and wonderful 4th of July. Be safe out there in the world. Be kind to one another. And don't forget, I love you, and there is nothing you can do about it. Take care.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Save on O'Reilly Brake Parts Cleaner. Get two cans of O'Reilly Brake Parts Cleaner for just $8. Valid in-store only at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Oh, oh.